I want to welcome you back to another episode of The Art of Healing. I'm your host and therapist friend, Trevor Hansen. So today on the podcast, I have Sarah, and Sarah is an amazing person. I reached out to her a few months back when I found her on Instagram. She's under the handle You Love and You Learn. She's a relationship anxiety coach, and she has a lot of phenomenal principles that align with my model of therapy and the way I approach a lot of couples therapy. And we have a really phenomenal conversation in this podcast, so I'm excited for you to listen and learn about it. If you're here looking to work on your relationship, trying to improve what you are doing currently, find deeper and more lasting connection with your partner, you can also visit me on Instagram and at TikTok, where I have some free resources available for you. The first one is just the video content that I create. I try to post a handful of times every week with just short soundbite information based on research-backed information to help you build a more lasting connection. You can find me at The Art of Healing by Trevor on TikTok and Instagram. You can also reach out to me directly at my website. So it's just trevorthetherapist.com. So feel free to reach out. I try to respond to as many messages as I possibly can. I don't give any kind of therapeutic advice over DMs. So if you do that, I unfortunately won't be able to help you there. But there's also an amazing free worksheet that I created to help you and your partner dissect how you disconnect, to understand, are there patterns to how we start missing each other or how we start fighting? Are there patterns, underlying patterns that drive this behavior that maybe if we further understand them, then we have powerful tools to unwind those patterns and do something different? And today's podcast, we actually talk a lot about that as well. So I'm excited for you to listen. And just as a quick reminder, at the time of this recording, I am not a licensed therapist. I do practice therapy. I should say, not a licensed therapist yet. Definitely getting there. I practice therapy under the supervision of fully licensed therapists. If you are in Utah specifically and would like to find a therapist, please reach out, as that's the region where I'm able to take on new clientele. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce you to Sarah. Actually, one more further ado, whatever. This is also not considered therapy. This podcast is helpful information, but it should be applied with caution according to your own life and your own context. So now, without further ado, let's get to the podcast and hear what Sarah has to say. Sarah, thank you so much for joining me. It's really fun that we get to have this conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, I'd love to just get started letting you introduce yourself to the audience and understanding who you are and what you do.
Yeah. So I am a relationship anxiety coach. And essentially what that means is I help people who are in healthy, loving relationships with a partner that they want things to work out with, move through some of the anxiety or doubts that can come up as a result of usually fears that are brought up within intimate relationships, and just helping them better understand why those things may be there and how to better move through them, because it's something I myself went through. And now I feel like I am much more well equipped to handle it. So have been able to share that wisdom with others now.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And I see that. I found Sarah on Instagram, for those who are listening. And I think you do a great job at really helping provide some really good information on, you know, how to navigate relationships with this anxiety. Because I think the context of a relationship is like, wherever I thought I was okay and life was going to be good and like I'm cruising, once we get into an intimate relationship, it's like that is the ultimate test to throw all of that off and just throw us for a loop.
Totally. Well, thanks. I appreciate that. Yeah. For me, I didn't see very much of a conversation around this. So now I feel really passionate about just letting people know that this is okay and that it doesn't necessarily mean you have to leave your relationship. And I'll give a disclaimer before we get too much further that I'm not talking to anyone in an abusive situation where you're constantly being mistreated, where you genuinely feel unsafe. So I know that some people can worry about that type of thing. And of course, that anxiety feels much more valid than the type of anxiety I was having with a very loving, kind person saying, but what if there's someone better out there for me? Or how can I be sure this is going to work out? So I just want to make that distinction as well.
No, I think that's really important. And I think I feel that same, like, I don't know, I feel that pressure sometimes when I'm posting pieces of content about relationships online. And it's like, I wish I had all the time in the world, but you know, you only got so many seconds out there to be like, hey, disclaimer, if this is happening for you, then this is not the same thing. Abuse versus just a healthy, loving relationship that includes some stress and some fear. Big distinction. So I really appreciate you saying that for sure. Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about that. I guess when somebody comes to you and they're working with you, what are some of the common themes you start seeing? Because I'm guessing it's probably going to be common to those who are listening, but what are some of these common themes that you see arise as you start to work with individuals?
The common theme I see is someone is in the healthiest, most supportive, loving relationship they've ever been in. And a part of their brain and a part of their heart is appreciative of this, recognizes it, is very happy, wants to make the relationship work. But there's what seems to be a bigger part of their brain that is feeling afraid, is feeling triggered by advice they see on social media, like trust your gut, or when you know, they don't feel like they know for sure that this is someone that they can see themselves with, or they really just feel like in 50 years, what if this wasn't the person for me? Like they're really stuck in future thinking about something that could go wrong versus appreciating what's going right in the moment. So it's really this almost tug of war with their mind between should I stay or should I go? And how am I supposed to know how to make that decision for myself?
Yeah. Yeah. I think, and it's very normal to have that tug of war. And I think it makes a lot of sense with all the influence that is out there. Like you got 1.5 billion people saying that they think they know what's right. And like, I'm one of them. I don't know if I'm right. You know, I might be wrong sometimes and I think that's okay. But I think that I've seen that message being pretty prevalent, I don't even know the word, but on social media where it's like if it's not a hell yes, it's a hell no. Like you have to be like black and white, one or the other. I'm like, whoa, hold on, slow down. Like when did we decide we only have to like get into relationships with perfect people?
Yeah, and I think part of the problem with the anxious mind is that black and white, all or nothing thinking. So if someone without maybe an anxious tendency had that thought of, oh, how can I be sure that this is going to be my partner forever? You know, they might just shrug it off and be like, I don't really know it, but I can't control that. Right. Whereas me formerly and my clients were very swept up in that of, well, how do I know? And I need 100% certainty because the couples I'm seeing get engaged were 100% certain. So I need to be 100% certain. And that's a big myth that I share on my page is that someone can be confident, but they don't have any guarantee that their relationship will work. And it's great to be confident, but certainty is not guaranteed past this moment or past this day. So no one can actually guarantee the outcome of their relationship. And I think that's a really hard pill for people to swallow because they would like that guarantee, even though it's not really possible.
Yeah, yeah. And I think it's kind of becomes this interesting paradox where the more anxiety we bring into a healthy relationship, the more like about it ending, the more likely it is to be difficult and probably to end, being that like it's that self-fulfilling prophecy. I feel like I see this every day in therapy. It's like the thing you're trying to avoid, the way you avoid it, creates more of that very thing. I don't know if you see that to be true or in your history.
Absolutely. And the fact that the anxiety becomes almost this thing to fight against instead of work with becomes part of the problem because people then are thinking, I shouldn't feel this way. This is bad. This is wrong. I'm a bad partner. And then they get into their own shame spirals. So it's funny because they'll start by saying, well, how do I even know I love this person? And then it turns into, well, oh no, I'm a bad person. They don't deserve me. And it's this just vicious cycle depending on how they're feeling on any given day. And it really takes interrupting the cycle and not really trying to think your way out because many of these are unanswerable questions, but tap into the present, tap into more of your body, not let your mind carry yourself into this future what if situation.
Yeah, I love that. I think, you know, tapping into your present situation, tapping into your body, that's a huge thing that I think I've been relying more heavily on like in therapy sessions recently. It's just like going to that body sensation and understanding it. For someone who's like, what, go to my body? Like, what does that really mean? I think a lot of people generally who probably follow you and I have some understanding because they're interested in these topics, but for you, and I think it changes depending on, you know, which coach or therapist you're talking to, what does it look like to go to your body? How would you introduce that topic to somebody?
Absolutely. Well, some of the ways to do it are really simple. It's a matter of actually executing them. So every single session of mine, I start off with a client. We do 3 mindful breaths together, and they're really slow, like a slow inhale, a slow exhale. And we're just kind of grounding ourselves into session. So if you're having a meeting, you could be back to backs all day and not actually take a second to be in the place where you're at. You could just have a million thoughts going through your head. So taking just a few breaths is a way to kind of tap back into where you are right this moment, just actually feeling what you're feeling and focusing on the breath itself. But another really simple one is the 5-4-3-2-1 technique of 5 things you can, I think, see around you, 4 things you can hear, 3 things you can touch. And it can literally be touching your own clothes or a blanket, 2 yeah. things you can smell, and 1 thing you can taste. And those 2 small but powerful ways of actually getting back into your body are just a way to say, I'm in this moment right now where I'm touching the soft blanket. I'm taking a sip of my cold water. I'm looking outside and I see the dog playing. Those things are here instead of 3 years ahead where I'm wondering if I'll still love my partner.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think that's really powerful because I've done it myself where I've been so anxious, kind of out in that future place, and then just coming back and like, okay, literally inside of this room is the only thing that matters. Like, my conversation with you right now is all that I'm doing, and it's all right. It doesn't matter that I got X, Y, and Z things to do down the road. And I think something that I've been trying to explore recently is like more mindfulness within a kind of a co-regulation state where we're doing this kind of together, where maybe your partner's arm is around you, or, you know, you're close to them, and just noticing, oh, what's it like to be with you right now? What's it like to feel like comfortable and safe here instead of worrying about like, are you going to be here in like 10 years from now? Is this going to be okay? It's like, let's enjoy this moment like right now and really heighten this feeling of connection, because I don't know, it'd be really sad to miss out on something as valuable as a connection, as a moment of connection.
Yeah, absolutely. And I really loved the book Anxiety RX by Dr. Russell Kennedy. And he had something where he talked about how you can always look to find safety in the present moment. And if you're genuinely unsafe, like if you are getting chased by someone, or if you're in, you know, a dark alley and you're not sure where you are, that doesn't feel safe. But usually our anxious mind is telling us that we're unsafe when we see a triggering post on social media and we feel unsafe because what does this mean about me? How does this impact my relationship? And so we need to remember at all costs to bring ourselves into some level of safety in whatever way that works for us. So it could be putting on your favorite soothing playlist, or, you know, a weighted blanket, or lighting a candle, or going out for a walk in nature without your phone, like taking a break from the screens for a little bit, whatever that is, to give yourself a reminder that you're actually not in danger. And if you are in danger, then you would be fixing the problem pretty urgently, right?
Yeah.
But most times we think it's urgent and needs to be solved right away, and it doesn't.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that. And I love the idea of like saying, you know what, let's find what's safe. And I think when you're able to get into that place of safety, you feel that grounding, you have better judgment. So you can understand like what is safe and what is not safe. Cause maybe there's elements of the relationship that aren't so safe, but in that kind of panicked fight or flight state, man, you don't even have your whole body to work with you. You're limiting your faculties. And I think even just for a sense of being able to judge your situation properly, taking that time to ground and calm down could be really fundamental. Yeah. So outside of grounding, like, I guess, what are some of the introductory ways where you say, if I'm in this place, I'm in this anxious place, I got this anxious heart where I don't know if this relationship's going to work. I see people getting engaged. They seem so certain. I guess, where would you direct your clients kind of in the beginning stages of this?
A big piece of this is unpacking the stories or beliefs that are causing them to feel the way they're feeling. So where did you learn that you couldn't have any sliver of doubt or question such a big life decision? Where did you learn that love isn't safe potentially? Like for me, my parents got a divorce. It was actually fairly recently considered, like comparing to other people, like it was within the last 7 or 8 years. So I was an adult during it. So it just was top of mind as I was getting more serious with my current relationship. So there's definitely stories and experiences, past traumas, past challenges, or the narratives on social media. You know, there's a lot of inner beliefs and patterns in people's relationship dynamics, and those are playing a big role in why they're feeling the way they're feeling. And if you can see a couple get engaged and be like, oh, I'm happy for them, you know, versus oh my gosh, like they look happier than we are. So that must mean my relationship isn't good. Like there's clearly a different belief system or frame of reference that's going into those two different reactions. So a big part of my work with clients is unpacking why they're so quick to think that having these doubts or, you know, not feeling 100% all the time means that they need to leave their relationship, and helping them create new belief systems that feel more empowering for them.
Yeah. Yeah. The experiences, they play such a fundamental role in how we view ourselves and how we view our relationships. I think I see that a lot in therapy, where I tend to meet with a couple together, and then I'll meet with them individually just to really get like that history, like what have you gone through. And it's amazing how we tend to either mirror one of our parents in how we deal with stress or anxiety in the relationship, or our experiences with our parents and siblings, and that in particular, I mean other influence as well, but that in particular also creates how we respond. And it's a natural way of responding. And I think that there's maybe some shame around this. It's like, oh, if you have everyone's talking about like anxious attachment or avoidant attachment, all these attachments. And it's like, they're not death sentences. They're called just like, we're people and we all have a little bit of one or another. Like I tend to be more on like the anxious pursuing side when I'm in that place that's maybe coping in a way that's not very effective. And I think we all have those based on our own history.
Yeah, I think labels can be helpful up to a certain point, but then sometimes we put them into our identity and then we latch onto them. And even for someone who comes onto my page, if they identify with having relationship anxiety, or some people identify more with the term relationship OCD, and both of them, if you are so tightly held to that identity, then it's going to be really hard to let it go. And it may even become an excuse like, well, I'm just, you know, acting that way because of my relationship anxiety. And so I think attachment styles or labels, when they feel empowering and informational, it's great to hold on to them. But at a certain point, just being mindful of how tightly we are grasping onto it, and if it's actually beneficial, or if it's maybe a way to kind of further cope and almost make, I don't like the word excuse because that feels shame-based, but almost like, well, I'm not going to try and do much about it just because that's kind of my label that I've been given.
Yeah. Yeah. You can definitely box yourself in pretty easily doing that. And that's sad. Cause like, yeah, I think we all have a way of coping that's maybe a little less healthy and a little more healthy at times. And it's definitely something that can be learned and rewired, as you've seen in your own work.
Totally. And that makes me think of something that comes up in the relationship space, the word toxic. Use the word unhealthy coping mechanism that made me think of toxic. And I think part of what happens when people come to me is they think that maybe there's some things that their partner does that are toxic, or, you know, like I'm worried that there are toxic parts of our relationship. And I think that word has gotten such a bad rap, but of course I'm not talking about abuse of like type toxic, but if there's certain things, like before we were coming on, you shared that something you've been interested in lately is like, where is the line between influence and manipulation? And I think it's such a fine line. And I think there's such a fine line between toxic and not toxic. And we all have toxic traits or toxic personality responses to things. And so when we try and label someone as toxic, it's almost like we are dehumanizing the other parts of them that are great. And we just, you know, we're like, oh, this person's toxic, when we don't realize that we're all just responding to the way that we grew up, or like just our life experiences or our belief systems. So that word just kind of irks me a little bit because I think we've overused it.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. There's a handful of words out there that, I mean, with good intention, I believe generally one, like people are good at heart and they're trying to do something good and influence. But yeah, I think that's one of the challenges. And I mean, there's benefits and challenges to how public mental health has become. Benefits are just like people know about it, people are willing to, like the destigmatizing it. But there's also this weird way where words become culturally influenced by the way they're shared. I think things like toxic people, or even the word codependency, sometimes I'm like, I think we're getting it wrong. I mean, that's my unpopular opinion sometimes, but I don't know. I think what you're saying is a really more like loving and accepting approach to words like toxic and realize, hey, toxic just means that like it's not good for the system. Like it's going to perturb the system in a way that's not going to be good for it. And we all got some of that. And that's kind of normal to be on that plane.
Realizing almost there's a sliding scale to all of these words, kind of that gray area, not that black or white. Whereas, you know, codependency or attachment, like being attached is not inherently wrong, or being dependent on another person isn't inherently wrong. So we put it as like either you're codependent or you're healthy, but that's not true. There's a gray area for everybody. And I also think it's dependent on what works well for you and your partner or partners. Totally. It's like you have to have that conversation and help cultivate the version that works best for you. So there's no one size fits all approach that someone can almost give you that would work for every single relationship. It's completely unique.
Yeah, absolutely. It's unique and everyone's story is unique. And that's why we all have different partners that are completely different. Like, you know, you can sit there and go, man, I am so glad I'm not married to that person. But that person who's married to them is so dang happy. And I love that. That's so cool. Let's kind of go back in our conversation and looking at, I'm kind of like tracking the journey of the person who is in this spot where they're seeing people getting engaged, they're uncertain about their relationship, though their relationship seems to be generally progressing in a, you know, healthy, meaningful way. They're starting to be aware of their own body responses, trying to come into the present. They're starting to become aware of their story. I guess in your history and your opinion in your professional world, what do we do with those stories? Like, where do we take it from there, from what you've seen?
Yeah, a big piece of like a through line of what I help clients with is also bringing in more compassion to their stories and also to themselves, because oftentimes these stories are very shame-based and very negative. This is wrong, or I need to be perfect, or there's this underlying just desire for everything to be just right and sorted out and no uncertainty. And so one of the modules I do in my private coaching program is all focused on the self. And I don't believe that you have to fully love yourself before you love someone else, but I do believe that the amount you love yourself can then, you know, be funneled into your other relationships. I don't love the word funneled, but given to other people. So I think a big part of it is self-compassion, self-trust, self-worth, you know, self-care and self-soothing, like being able to just rely on yourself a little bit more and not make your partner the only person responsible for your fulfillment or your love and making sure things are going well for you. It takes a level of self-responsibility. So that's a big piece of, I guess, once they understand some of these stories or narratives, then it's about taking responsibility and changing those narratives to be more empowering for them and kind of unpacking the ones that don't feel like they're supporting or serving them anymore. Because if you believe that you have to find the perfect person, there will never be any problems, then you're not going to feel very excited when a problem does inevitably come up in the relationship. Whereas if you're like, oh yeah, problems are not so bad, it's more about how I repair the problem than the actual problem itself, and more about how we talk about it that matters, then you can feel a lot less shame or anxiety or fear when a challenge does come up.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think about how challenges and anxieties, the good times are great in relationships. Like, yeah, let's go to Disneyland, let's have a great time, you know, whatever that looks like. But also I think those challenging times are when we come incredibly close, like incredibly close. And I think this is evident from, I think, what I see in my work, but also it's funny, recently, so I'm actually engaged, I'm about to get married, like in 11th of March, so like 22 days, something like that. And so that's exciting and that's cool, you know, and some of those same thoughts, you know, I think anybody in a really healthy relationship, and I would venture to say my relationship is super healthy, but you know, sometimes I'll turn to Elise and I'll be like, hey, you ever like a little bit scared? She's like, yeah, I'm like a little bit scared sometimes. And like, we don't really know what it is that we're scared of. It's like, yeah, we're like a little bit scared and that's okay. But that's kind of a side note. I was talking to like a good friend, mentor of mine, and he was talking with Elise and I about about this. And he's like, what are you most excited for? And we kind of mentioned a few things, you know, like creating a family and like just the important stuff. And also like how our relationship will strengthen us and our relationship with God and all sorts of things. And he was like, you know what I think you're going to see is that the times when you go through hard things together are the times when you're going to love each other way more than you ever have. And you're going to feel like it's not even possible. It says you kind of go up in a notch. It's like when you have a baby, boom, that's another notch. Or like when you go through like some financial difficulty and you get through it together, like somehow that attachment, that closeness, that connection, it grows in those moments. So I don't know. I don't like shun them or like try to run away from those hard things. I think that, I don't know, that kind of gives me as a person who's early engaged, looking at that relationship, a little bit of hope to say, hey, I look forward to the future, whether it's like really awesome and easy or pretty hard.
Yeah, I love that. And congratulations. That's exciting.
Thank you.
I used to just be like, oh my gosh, you know, when someone gets engaged, I would have all these anxious thoughts or feelings like, how did they know? Or like, what if things aren't going to work out? Or like, I would just worry so much. And now I'm just genuinely so excited for people. And I'm always wishing people the best. And I know that we can get through not only like those fears or challenges together, but then of course you experience the fulfillment and the joy that love also can bring to you. And that's something I've recently tried to shift into showing a little bit more with my audience, because I have an audience of people who are feeling anxious. So I don't want to constantly be shoving in their faces like the happy moments only, because that's not why they're there. They're here to work through the anxiety. But what would I be doing if I wasn't also providing some of that hope? So I think talking about the challenges, how you overcome them, and then also the love on the other side of that can be a really good journey for people to see, to have some hope and inspiration for themselves.
Yeah, I really do think so. I think most things, I won't say all because that's a little like, I know what I'm talking about, but I think most good things grow through like a little bit of struggle. I mean, I go to the gym, I go to therapy, like they're not that comfortable places to be. Or like, you know, skiing is like a big thing. I'm teaching Elise how to ski this year, and she's from California, never slid on snow in her life, and I've been doing it my whole life. And yeah, it's like a real struggle, like her knees hurt and her legs and everything else, but she loves it. And like the freedom that that provides, I think the freedom on the other side of struggle is maybe like part of what I'm talking about, and maybe what you're talking about here as well, is that there's that freedom and that, yeah, freedom and that love on the other side of struggle that maybe we don't look forward to, or that we don't see in those early stages of a relationship.
Totally. And I think that everything ebbs and flows. And in order to appreciate the flowing times, you have to have some of those ebbs, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have moments of disconnection, then you appreciate the moments of connection so much more. And if you have challenges, then you appreciate the good times so much more. And I don't think that if we're just going on a straight path with no ups or downs, that you're going to even appreciate it as much. Whereas if you've had highs and lows, then you have something to compare it to. And especially if you're in a longer term relationship and you've had multiple sets of highs and lows, then you can trust that they will come back again during whichever season. And you're not going to take the highs for granted, but you know they're not going to last forever. And then same with the lows, you're not going to think that those will never end either. Because I think that's part of the problem as well in the mindset of those with relationship anxiety. And I say problem because it isn't serving people, not because it's bad or wrong, but it's just not moving you forward, to think that this hard season will last forever. And that's what I think keeps people stuck. And they worry that this hard season will never go away, but there will be a different relationship where I don't have these hard seasons. And so I need to go find a more perfect partner.
And if those hard seasons tend to be lasting for a long time, and maybe the relationship, it's kind of hard to tell whether or not this is a good thing. Do you ever have people, whether it's online or actually in person, like walk in the door with that spot where they're like, hey, I don't know if I want to let go of all this anxiety about this relationship, because yeah, it might not be the best. I don't know. How does that go for you?
Yeah, I usually ask people what their why is, not only for this relationship, but for any relationship. Like, why do you want a relationship in general? Because I think if you lose sight of that, it's really hard to even think about moving past those anxious times. But one thing I really focus on, and maybe we can talk about this more in depth, I'd love to hear your thoughts on values and how they show up within couples. But for me, I think values is such a big component of this. If you are having anxiety or doubts because you don't think you're compatible and your values are misaligned, or you can't respect each other's values, that to me feels like a place to really pause and get curious and ask more, because I personally feel very, very in sync with me and Nate's values, right, and our visions and what we're thinking about doing in our lives. And so, yeah, there are some frustrations, like, or things that irritate me, but the bigger vision is there. Whereas if someone comes to me and they are misaligned on values, or feel like the partner sees the world in a completely different way from them, but they can't respect the way their partner sees the world, that to me is the challenge. Not that you see the world in different ways, but can you try and get on board with that? Or are you looking for a relationship where someone is exactly like you in every way, which has its own challenges of its own because we're all different. But I do think values is a big driving force where I try to get curious with people and help them better understand that.
Yeah, I agree. It's funny you should say this. I was thinking, so where I do my thinking for like creating like little bits of video is when I'm driving in my car. And I probably look like a crazy person just talking to myself out loud while I'm driving, having a great time. But I've been thinking about this actually, is what determines like, and or what influences, I should say, really positive and healthy relationships that can last for a long time. And I think there's a lot of emphasis, especially in the early stages of a relationship, dating in particular. It's like all on hobbies and interests. Like, oh, can we go and see these movies because we like them together, or do these sports, or like whatever that is, where I think a lot more weight, and that in the long term, you're going to see it show up, is in these values. Like if you have misaligned values, I think it is really challenging in the way that you're describing it, like that we can't get on board with each other's and make sacrifices. I think where you see this happen a lot is maybe faith transition, where people have differing views on, you know, their core belief structure around how they conceptualize themselves in a spiritual way, or and God, and how they therefore live. That becomes really tricky. It doesn't mean that it's, you know, this silver bullet and it's the end of your relationship, because people can figure it out. And I think it does come down to that element that you're talking about, that respect, and knowing how to respect it in a way that you also feel like, hey, this is okay for me. I can genuinely live this way. Maybe with this little bit of misalignment.
Absolutely. And I also think growth as a value is interesting. Of, do you value your own growth? And then do you value the growth of the relationship and finding someone who is on similar pages? Because for me and Nate both independently are very into personal development and learning and growth. And that was one of the reasons we actually connected at the beginning. Like, we would listen to the same podcast and talk about it, or just, you know, we were reading the same types of books, and we both prioritized that individually, but then it also became very clear, especially when I was going through my own anxiety, that Nate was willing to work on growing the relationship together. And I've kind of taken the lead on it just because it's more of my focus and what I do. So I have more ideas of how to kind of work on the relationship than he would, but he's always so on board. And whether or not you're both not necessarily into growth or both very into growth, I think it's important to be somewhat aligned, because if you have one person who's really looking to grow and then one person's really content, it's going to feel like you're at odds and not on the same page. So that's a big piece of it as well, is not only can you respect each other's values or be aligned on them, but are you on the same page about how you want to grow together?
Yeah. I think that's really huge, that value of growth. And I see that as well. Like, obviously I'm in, you know, the mental health space. Elisa's not, same kind of thing. She's all game for it, but I usually tend to bring the ideas to the table because this is what I do all day. But yeah, finding somebody who says like, okay, cool, like I'm on your team, let's go. That's really meaningful. Mm-hmm. That really is meaningful. I think also another element of this that I've been thinking about this week is that, you know, couples can have really different hobbies and interests, and still have wildly successful marriages, so long as their values have some congruency and they can align there with respect, and that they know how to deal with their own anxiety within the relationship in a way that helps maintain connection and doesn't undermine the health of the relationship. I think it's like how we manage that anxiety is really challenging.
Absolutely. And a big part of this is, can you take responsibility, or are you constantly looking for your partner to be responsible for something? And for me, it was hard to make the shift, but I very clearly needed to, that Nate was not responsible for my anxiety. I was, but it was really a big wake up call to realize that, because the whole first few years of being anxious, I thought it must have been him. Like if it wasn't him, then why was I feeling anxious? I wouldn't choose this, you know? And so that was kind of my own self-talk at the time. And now I've really shifted to the point where I'm like, no, this is completely my own responsibility. And to your point about communicating and just making it kind of like a safe space with your partner, it's so just critical to not be looking for their faults or blames or what's wrong with them and how can they fix things. It's like, no, how can I step up as well?
Yeah, I think this bleeds into the thought process that about the difference between influence and manipulation as well. I think if we take that stance of it's all on you, it's your fault, like that's kind of I'm not going to say like you're being manipulative, and there's a big range in that, right? We can be tiny bit manipulative with a little guilt trip that's like, you know, in the grand scheme of things, probably harmless, not the best. But I think if you have the mindset that it's all on you, you need to change, it takes that point of control, because it's like that fear. I got that fear, and it takes a point of control from internal to purely external, where I'm going to control you and your situations in order to help me feel safe. And what you're saying, I'm hearing, is like when we shift that responsibility inward, we also shift the control. It's like, I can do this on my own. I can make some of these changes, learn how to self-soothe, and maybe when I do go external, it looks different. It looks like invitation. It looks like honest asking for what I need, rather than doing it in ways that maybe are a little bit more deceptive or forceful.
What comes to mind, and I'd be curious how you felt. I didn't love the book Attached. I thought it was really informational, but I did think it was a little bit like direct as far as if you're in this type of relationship, you may want to reconsider it with certain parts. So I don't know how you felt, but there was one thing that stood out to me in that book about specifically the way that anxiously attached people tend to handle things. And I know there's the same with the avoidance, but the anxious one stood out to me was the protest behaviors of, I'm going to, you know, do this so that I get a reaction from you. And any sort of behavior where you're trying to get a specific reaction from someone, I would argue dips into a little bit of manipulation, because you're trying to control the outcome and you have an expectation of how someone should be acting versus allowing them to act in their own way.
Yeah, totally. I agree with that 100%. It's like, am I inviting? Am I honest? Am I gentle? Like, what are the elements of invitation versus, like that manipulation? Like, am I trying to push or force a new behavior in a way that's maybe a little bit more like deviant? I was actually looking up the definition of deviant this week to make sure I understood it. And it's kind of like that kind of backdoor, a little bit tricky, not direct way, but being able to ask directly for what we need. It sounds like a really simple concept. Man, it goes miles in helping us soothe our anxiety in a co-regulation type of sense when we're talking about involving our partner.
Yeah, absolutely. And one thing that's slightly related to this topic that's coming to mind for me is, I often tell clients that your initial reaction, or if you behave in a way that you're not the most proud of, that's not necessarily the issue to focus on. What you do next, I think, is just as important, if not more. So let's say I noticed myself being accidentally manipulative to Nate and like trying to get him to behave in a certain way. I feel like there's a couple different options. You can either really double down on that and say, nope, that's what I'm going to do. I'm going to stick with this. I'm going to make sure he does what I'm hoping he does and really hit it home. Or you can kind of bring the awareness of, ooh, that didn't feel so great. And I know that's not really helping the greater good of our relationship. I'm going to acknowledge that I just did that and apologize and take responsibility, because sometimes we can't control our anxious response. Or sometimes if we say something in the moment, maybe we're in fight or flight and we're not necessarily consciously doing it. But the second we notice, and it can be 10 minutes later, an hour later, or a day later, that we realize, oof, that didn't feel so great. And I don't like how I showed up there. Can you own that? Or do you just kind of pretend it didn't happen? Because I think those moments really build trust in the relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. What stops us from owning those moments? What do you think?
I think it's the fear of being wrong and looking bad. Like if I admit that I was wrong here, they're going to think that I'm a bad partner. But I think it's kind of the opposite. Like I think on social media, if you see somebody owning their stuff or being like, hey, I'm not perfect, I'm human, it almost makes you respect them more, but we think it's going to make people respect us less in some way.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think of the word trust. Like I think we're seeing, you know, those people who do own their stuff, there's a lot of trust there. I think, you know, outside of therapy, there's this wonder, this terrible war of opinions everywhere that are just so like polarized in every single way that you can think of. And there's a lot of channels that maybe don't own like honesty. And it's like, I think there's a lot of distrust, for example, and I'm not trying to make this political in any way, but in like a lot of big media companies, because they don't own their crap. Like it's never like, oh yeah, we said that wrong, that was a mistake. But then some of these like smaller niche people who are out there just trying to look at true information are like, hey, yeah, I was actually kind of wrong there. I think there's a lot of trust there. And you look at even where the numbers go, where people are gravitating to nowadays, it's incredible. The shift in how we even consume media is a testament or an example, case example, maybe on a larger scale than on our relationships, but I think human nature is the same. We're going to gravitate to people who are able to own their mistakes and just say, I did that wrong. That was not the best.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I definitely don't think it's political when both sides could do a little bit more of that taking
yes,
ownership. So
totally.
I think you're totally right. And I agree that there's more pressure, especially, I mean, for me specifically, I can only speak for myself and maybe you can too, as having a social media platform, but because my face and my name are attached to it, and because I care so much about the information I'm putting out, if someone gives me genuine feedback, like I will receive it, take it into mind, and try and shift the behavior, especially if it's something that, you know, I want to make sure that I'm doing to serve others, and it's coming off in a way that wasn't serving others. So I think it definitely is different when it's like that smaller, you know, I guess platform, because it's really your information and you want to be helpful towards people. But I'm not sure if everyone feels that way or not. But I do think the world we live in now, people are quick to assume that, oh, you didn't give that disclaimer, so you know, that's wrong, and you're not being careful enough with your words. But I think most people are really genuinely not trying to cause a stir or leave anyone out in their work. It's just really hard to add every single piece of nuance in a 2200 character caption. So it is difficult these days, I would say, and that could be a very big detour with this podcast, but it's difficult to appease all different options and make it, you know, sound nuanced and add the context that's required.
Yeah. I mean, it's incredibly difficult. And I think that's where some grace comes in. Like I love the belief that generally people are good people. I think I said it already once, and it's like, I don't know, staying there for yourself and for other people is such a compassionate and graceful place to be. I mean, I think about you saying, hey, let's infuse a little bit of compassion into your story. Like how you see yourself really makes a difference, but also how we see other people really makes a difference. And I think in that moment when we get something wrong, that fear of not getting it right or fear of doing it wrong quickly leads down to this identity piece where it's like, okay, it's not just I did it wrong, but like I am wrong, like I am not enough. Goodness, that fear, I think the fear of losing my partner and the fear of not being good enough, like 90%+ of the people I talk to, when we boil it down and we kind of get through the emotional layers of it all, comes down to that most of the time. And I think this graceful place is definitely needed.
Yeah. And with our partners too, I think John Gottman has the phrase of always assuming positive intent. And I really love that when it comes to relationships, because oftentimes in a meeting with a client, they could be triggered by something that happened with their partner, what they said or did. And usually when we take it a few steps further, I say, okay, what do you really think was happening there? And they can usually admit like their heart was in the right place. You know, they didn't mean it, or you know, they didn't even know that that was something that would make me feel upset, or they were trying to do something nice and then it just didn't measure up to my expectations. Like, whatever it is, if you can at your core trust that this person cares about you, then you can try and remember most times that a person that cares about you is not trying to hurt you or upset you. And yeah. even if they end up doing it, then you can hopefully have a discussion around it without feeling like it's us versus each other, but us versus the problem instead.
Yeah. Yeah. And maybe you have an answer to this, but I don't know, like, what are some of the levers that help us to get to that place where we can start seeing our partners with maybe better intent, and we can know that, like, hey, they probably don't think that all these bad and terrible things about me, but they really have good intention. I don't know, what helps us to get there?
I think in the moment, the first thing is tying back to what we started with, which is changing kind of the state you're in and tapping back into the present and your body. Because if you're in a fear-based place, it's really hard to look at someone you love, even if it's your parent, your best friend, your sibling, whoever it is. If you're frustrated and you're worked up and your nervous system is on overdrive, it's really hard to neutralize that with like gratitude and appreciation. So it's kind of
right.
pausing and taking a step back. And then I do think it's important to have, I don't know, for me, like I have a favorited photo album of like me and Nate's pictures, or like just some fun memories or texts that he sent. And I think you have to have something that reminds you of this person's character. So whether it's memories of nice things they've done or happy things, or, you know, ways that they've made you feel loved and supported, just bringing that also into the picture. And then even if you still have the negative piece in mind, right, from what just ever happened, it's like you can almost neutralize it by reminding yourself that it can be both, and I'm irritated and this person has always shown that they love and respect me. And so just holding space for the two different ideas to both be true and not letting the fear-based one completely dominate.
Oh, that is so powerful. I love that. I love the idea of holding two ideas at the same time, the dialectic of that kind of a thinking. That's why I really love like talking in parts language. Like, there's a part of me that feels this way and a part of me that feels that way. And I think amplifying and giving voice to the part that you feel like is going to serve you in that moment is a skill that's incredibly helpful. I do that in therapy often. I'm like, okay, I hear this part that's like, you're really mad at him and you're really afraid and other things, but also you love him like tons. Like, tell me about that part for a minute. Like, let's massage him out. And I think that knowing yourself is a huge piece. I love how you said, you know, loving yourself, working on yourself, doing those individual things to show up in the relationship. I think that awareness and understanding, I can hold two thoughts, feelings, and ideas at the same time, and that's totally normal and okay. And it gives me then two doors to choose which one to go through, rather than subconsciously being pushed into one or the other based on my patterns.
Yeah. And imagine if we had all been told it's okay to feel excited and scared when we get engaged, or it's okay to feel loving towards someone and feel irritated. Like, the amount of anxiety that would have, you know, reduced in people would be huge, because that's what people are coming to me for or on my page. They don't fully wrap their head around the fact that you can have multiple things be true and multiple feelings and multiple thoughts about something, and neither one need to be right or wrong. They can just be acknowledged. And then slowly but surely, you can choose to shift what you think about it if you want. Like, if you're like, hey, I don't want to feel as irritated, or I don't want to feel as scared, I can unpack that and explore it. But first, can I just allow it to be there?
Yeah. And I think this translates also into observing that which is going on for your partner as well, knowing that they can have the same experience. I think about, you know, when Elisa and I got engaged, for example, she was like, had one night in particular where she's just like, I don't know why, but I'm like so anxious and I'm like afraid of this. And I'm like, okay, great. Like, I realize that that's there, but she also is so stoked and excited about the whole prospect. And it's funny, there's like a small part of us that doesn't want to tell our partner that, because we don't want that misinterpretation to happen. And at the heart of disconnection is a misinterpretation of intended messages. And I think that fear of the misinterpretation can hold us back from being open and real about really what we are feeling. And being the partner, being able to receive that is also a huge skill to recognize it in ourselves and them as well.
Absolutely. And taking what your partner is saying without it being personal is huge. I mean, I'm so lucky that when I had my, you know, peak anxiety and I told Nate everything, even went as far to say, I'm not sure I love you in the same way anymore. Like I laid it all out.
Wow.
And he met me with such empathy. And, you know, I don't want anyone who's listening to this, if you have a similar experience and your partner is confused or hurt, please know that is valid too. But
totally.
I was so appreciative that Nate was able to support me and really just try and understand what I was going through, not make it about him. And that is such an important skill to do in any relationship. I struggle with it often. You know, I take Nate's changes of behavior sometimes personally, and it's not. But getting that clarity of like, oh, did you intend this to be about me? Or is it just you're not having the best day or, you know, whatever's going on? And and really just getting that clarity instead of trying to make it all about you.
Yeah. I'm curious, in that moment, either for you and yourself, that experience, or maybe people you've worked with, when you went to Nate and you say, hey, I'm not even sure if I love you in the same way, like these really kind of scary things to hear from your partner, and he was just able to hold it, to be there with you, didn't make it about him. What happened to you? What happened to that anxious and that fearful place? What was some of the change?
I felt very appreciative and grateful in that moment. And it was this flood of like gratitude. And then the fear kind of dissipated, not that it never came back or that it was completely gone, but in that one moment where I felt like I could just be present with his response and just the way we were talking about things, it made it feel more vulnerable and less like this big, scary thing I had to hold by myself. I think anything you have to carry on your own just causes so much shame. It's even a bigger deal. And the second I started sharing my story publicly, I mean, even when 100 people followed me, it felt so good to know that someone resonated. And now there's like thousands of people, you know, like tens of thousands of people that resonate with your story. And you realize when you have no shame about your story, then it doesn't have power over you anymore. So I highly encourage someone, if they're listening and they felt this way and they have never told a single soul, start by just letting someone in. And it doesn't have to be your partner. I actually have a blog that's called Telling Your Partner About Relationship Anxiety on my website. And it's a great kind of step-by-step process of what to think about before you tell your partner. And I actually give you a script that people have used before and said it really helped them to kind of share this with people, because it is really hard when you don't know how to explain something that's happening to you. And then it can be really confusing for that other person. And if I could go back and do it differently, I wish I would have known more what was going on before I just kind of word vomited all of everything to Nate. And so someone who's reading my blog, I mean, they know more than I did at the time. So they can be a little bit better prepared to kind of share this and make it a little bit more about them and less about the partner. And hopefully that person would receive it then in a less personal way.
Yeah. And I'm hearing you kind of hint towards some of the elements of what makes that a little bit more successful, or what might be in that blog. And I mean, I encourage people to go check it out. But in addition to, I guess, what does it look like to make it not about your partner, but make it about yourself? Like, what are some of the elements that we carry into that conversation to help it to be more successful and maybe well-received, or whatever that looks like?
Yeah. So if someone's on my Instagram or blog, I feel like they would know what parts of what I'm saying resonate with them. And I think bringing those exact phrases or experiences to their partner would help them, because what I talk about so much is that these anxious thoughts are usually, assuming again, this is like a loving, healthy relationship that you want to work, these core fears are causing intrusive thoughts. So these core fears are fear of failure, or fear of loss, or fear of not being worthy, fear that we won't be fulfilled one day, fear of divorce. There's so many core fears that are actually below the surface of the intrusive thought, saying, well, do I even love them? Or am I settling? And when people take those thoughts at face value, and then they go to their partner saying, I'm worried I'm settling, I'm worried I don't love you, that's not really the full story. The full story is, I'm terrified of uncertainty. And I'm terrified that I can't predict what will happen in our relationship. And so it's coming out as, I don't know if I care about you. And that takes like some understanding. But if people read through my page, I think they would be a little bit better equipped to at least share some of that. And then, I mean, I know coaching isn't an option for everybody, but whether it's like a course or whether it's a coaching program or something to like better understand the relationship anxiety and what you're going through, then you'll be even more supported and feel even more able to kind of talk about this. Because I guess I already said this, but one of my biggest regrets was just not knowing what was even going on and kind of fumbling my way through telling Nate instead of feeling like I could share with him, I'm going through this. Other people have it too. I'm not alone in it. It's really about my own journey. It's not about you, but I really wanted to let you know, because sometimes it does feel like it's about you, and that can be really hard.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I love that idea of kind of centralizing the fear, isolating it, knowing really what's going on, because there's different levels of fear. At the top, we've like, I'm afraid I'm not going to love you forever, or that you're not going to love me, or whatever that looks like. But then as we peel it back, it's like, oh, I generally might have a fear of abandonment, or I generally have a fear that I'm not good enough. And this is how it therefore shows up for me in this relationship.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know those core fears are not necessarily obvious right away. So I don't want to make it feel like people should understand that stuff just automatically. But if you really take some time to ask yourself, you know, the five whys people talk about, like, why does this bother me? Okay, well, then why does that bother me? And then why does this bother me? Like, I realized that one of my core fears was not just getting divorced, but that I would be the reason that we would get a divorce. Like, I would be a partner that drove Nate away, or like, I wouldn't be able to handle relationships. And so I don't know. I just remember saying, like, well, why am I so scared of divorce? And then I like ended up continuing to ask the question of why until I realized, like, I'm scared I'm going to fail at relationships. And so that to me is a bigger light bulb moment of like, oof, yeah, I'm really scared of failure. And I'm scared that because my parents got divorced, I would too. And then that says something about me as a person. And there's just all these judgments that get attached to our stories about love and relationships. And those are what we need to explore, not just the intrusive thoughts that are kind of pesky and pop up.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause usually that's just kind of the tip of the iceberg.
Exactly.
Those thoughts that come up. And I think a good place to start as well, if you're going through the why and it still is a little bit confusing most of the time, and it's not true for everybody, but I feel like these core fears do lie in those categories that we've been mentioning. It's that, like, that fear of loss, that fear of failure, fear of not being good enough. And looking at those and is like, oh, do any of these resonate for me, and how, is a huge way to maybe start exploring that conversation with yourself, is just looking at those three, and maybe more if you want to add more, but like just looking at those and say, okay, do any of these feel right to me? Does any of these resonate?
Yeah, absolutely. I agree. Yeah. And sometimes we overcomplicate things. Like, you don't need to go on this whole exploratory process. If what we just shared resonates, then you have that awareness now. And now you can start deciding, oh, in these moments, like, oof, I'm noticing maybe my fear of failure is actually coming up here, and just have a dialogue around it instead of trying to nitpick your partner. Like, how cool would it be if we could be like, oof, I'm noticing that the reason I'm getting triggered here is because I'm worried that our relationship will fail. Like, that's such a different conversation than, why didn't you put the dishes away? Like, I keep telling you to do that, you know?
Yeah. And I think it takes this moment of potential, like, it takes all this energy that's down in there, this like fearful energy of like something's going on, and you have the option to turn it into criticism or invitation, and they can change really quickly. One says to the partner, you're not good enough, you're not doing it right, you're not showing up for me in the right way, and generally maybe I don't like you. And on the other side, it's like, hey, you actually are good enough for me. Like, I love you so much, and I'm actually terrified to lose you. Or I'm terrified that I'm going to do something that's going to interrupt this cycle. Or I'm terrified that I'm not good enough. Like, man, that second message is way more accessible and way more connecting. And I think it takes a while to decipher through those. But it helps our partner to receive what's actually true, what's actually going on for us, rather than the message of they're not good enough and they're not measuring up.
Totally. And something I'm working on, and I'm not perfect at it, but the other day, me and Nate realized we were like in this like weird couple of days of just tension. Like, we have those moments sometimes, but we were just nagging each other about stupid stuff. Like, we had just moved into a new apartment, and like, we didn't have our schedules down yet. And just like little things were like irritating each other. And I remember he kind of lovingly pointed out, as he does most times, he's more kind of aware of some of this stuff. Whereas sometimes, even though I coach about the stuff all the time, I can still get stuck in my old patterns, but he called it out. And then I wrote him this email and I put it on one of my blogs actually. And I shared the emails with people where I said, I actually realized that the reason I'm worrying about all this stuff is because I'm scared. And I wrote like why I'm scared. Like, I'm scared that we're both working so much right now that we're going to disconnect and like grow apart. I'm scared that, you know, when we don't split the household chores, that like, we're going to have this problem in the future. And that's going to be something we like continue to argue about. Like, it was just simple things that were irritating me, but then I dipped down into the core fear and I shared those with him. And he was so empathetic and met me with so much more vulnerability and compassion as well. So if we can just even get in the habit of saying like, what am I scared of? Like, what is causing me to be so afraid right now? And then vulnerably explain that, we're usually met with so much more compassion and like the guards come down and you're not defensive. Like, you're just trying to connect in that place instead of you're right, I'm wrong. Because no matter who you are as a person, if someone comes at you saying you're not doing this right, you're going to get defensive. It's just a natural human thing to want to protect yourself. So when we're on the attacking side and needing someone to defend themselves, it's no wonder that the conversation may go south. Whereas if you're the one that can start the conversation off and bring those guards down, it's huge.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you ever have clients where maybe they bring the guard down, they attempt to approach in that way, and maybe the partner's still just hearing those messages of that they're not good enough, or maybe it's not as well received as Nate did, because it sounds like he did an amazing job of just like being there for you. Do you ever have clients who it doesn't go so well for them?
I've heard stories where it, not necessarily always in telling about relationship anxiety, but just in certain conversations or dialogues, that things are not always, you know, executed perfectly, and I wouldn't expect them to be. But I think for me, I just always encourage them to have a follow-up conversation, and based on how that goes, that I think is important to pay attention to, because we're all going to have moments where we're on the defense, or maybe we need some space and we need to come back to something. It's not going to be handled great. But if then the partner won't ever talk about it or avoids it, or just, you know, says, I can't do this, it's too much, or, you know, I'm not good with my feelings or whatever, it's like, we want someone that's able to bring themselves back and have the dialogue and kind of show up and not run away from the challenge. So to me, I just help them feel empowered to kind of like set boundaries or ask for what their needs are if they're not feeling like they're being met.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And I think if you've done that work, you've been through that journey of understanding what are these core fears, and you get to a place where you can explain them, you have a real, like, man, you have a real beautiful advantage in life that most people don't go on that journey and go on that adventure. They just kind of subconsciously live through these experiences. But you also have a knowledge and hopefully a newfound empathy for yourself, a kindness and compassion that maybe can be utilized to extend towards your partner in that situation. Maybe your partner does feel a little bit defensive, and you can maybe start to recognize in a patient place, like, oh, maybe this is that fear of them not being good enough, like, or maybe it's this, you know, maybe this is what's going on. And you don't, I mean, we're not going to sit there and like diagnose the fears of our partners and be like, this is it. But that curiosity, bringing that in with a sense of patience, like, hey, it took me a minute, it took me like my whole life to figure this out until just recently. Maybe I can be gentle and patient and guiding in that conversation, rather than being like, well, frick, I did all my work. Like, I figured out what my anxieties are and you didn't handle it. Like, I'm out of here. I don't know. Exactly. I think there's room for some compassion there.
Yeah, absolutely. And just knowing that we're all on our own journeys. And I mean, it's funny because one of my clients yesterday brought in a story and she was saying, well, I'm doing this work with you and I'm kind of like focusing on the relationship, but you know, my partner isn't. And the ironic part was that she had just had a disagreement with him where he was very calm and like brought rational, you know, ideas to the table and was just helping kind of bring the energy down and ended up being the one to like resolve things. And I was just like, huh, but don't you think your partner is on their own journey and still contributing things that are really beneficial to the relationship? They don't need to be working with a coach to be a great resource to still support you and also help navigate the relationship. So I do think there's a stigma if you're doing your own self-development work that everyone needs to do it in the exact same way you have. But yeah. I do think that a lot of lessons come up organically. So just remembering that just because you work with a coach or like you read books and listen to podcasts, it doesn't mean that you're like spiritually ahead of your partner necessarily. Like they have their own ways, of course, of bringing the contributions into the relationship.
Yeah. That's so true. Being willing to take that step back and say, you know what, my answer is not the answer. It might be the answer for me right now. And that's great. That's awesome. We can celebrate that. But yeah, I think recognizing the good and what your partner's doing can really be powerful.
Totally.
And hey, man, when someone recognizes what I'm doing that's good, talk about like softening the defenses, feeling more engaged. And I think that's influence when we're talking about manipulation versus influence. You're directly sharing what your fear is, but also giving them credit and noticing, you know, the good that they bring. That's going to influence them to maybe come to that place that's a little bit more understanding, a little bit more empathetic and connecting. And that's a real gentle and honest way to influence your partner for good.
Yep. Couldn't agree more. Well said.
Awesome. Well, I've absolutely loved our conversation, and I'm curious if there's any message that you would send to my audience, like the thing that's really core and important to you. I'd love to know, what is that thing that you'd love to leave with us today?
That you can be in a loving, healthy relationship, and it's okay to still have some fears and doubts come up in that, and it's not a 100% guaranteed sign that you have to leave. It's a sign that there may be some inner exploration that you can do. And of course, once you make that inner exploration and learn more about yourself and the relationship, there's no right answer here. But I just think that in our culture today, people are so quick to just say, oh, just find another one or on to the next. And I really encourage people to just slow down and get more curious and know that there's other options of how to move through some of these fears than giving up something that means a lot to you.
I think that's beautiful. Because yeah, these relationships are so precious to us. I think this is the source of some of our greatest feelings, positive feelings, and our greatest anxieties in this whole world around these relationships. And it's a real bummer when people just say, yeah, forget it, it's okay. Marriage is a piece of paper, because it's a lot more than that. Or a relationship is more than just an agreement. It's a lot more than that. And so if those who are listening want to learn more and kind of begin this journey for themselves and they align with what you're saying, what are some good resources for them? Where can they go to find more information about what you provide?
Yeah, so I have all of my Instagram posts and TikTok posts, both at You Love and You Learn. I've been doing this for almost a year and a half now. So there's a ton of posts and Q&As on my highlights and videos on TikTok. So I think a good place to start would be kind of reviewing those free resources. And then if someone's looking to take even a further step, then I do have a digital course called Deconstruct the Doubts, as well as I offer private coaching. So those are ways that you can get more direct support from me, and you can learn more at my website, youloveandyoulearn.com.
Thank you so much for tuning into the podcast today. I hope you really enjoyed this conversation. It was definitely meaningful for me. If you'd like to learn more about my therapy services or just see some more information about how to build security in your relationship, please visit me on Instagram and TikTok at The Art of Healing by Trevor, or you can visit me on just online. Go to my website at trevorthetherapist.com. Thanks, and I hope you have a wonderful day.